for our reading this morning. Turn to Proverbs 18th chapter. We'll read verses 20 and 21 for our introductory thoughts. It's again, Proverbs 18, verses 20 and 21. From the fruit of a person's mouth, his stomach is satisfied. He is filled with the product of his lips. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. The Bible has a lot to say about the power of our words, the power that our tongue has to direct our life. We're going to talk a little bit about this morning. And we're going to consider the different ways that the power of our tongue, the power of our words, can influence our lives, either positively and negatively. We're going to look at a couple of examples. We're going to just kind of give you a brief outline. We're going to talk a little bit about James, not the character, but we're in James. And we're going to be studying two examples, one that we kind of briefly touched on, Dennis touched on last Sunday. We're going to be talking a little bit about the scene about David and Goliath. And then talk about the power, the creative power that our words have and why they have that power. But before we go any further, we'll go to God in a word of prayer. That if we knew about half the power that our words have, that we'd be more careful with the words that we choose. With how they affect other people, certainly, probably more importantly, but also how they affect our own life and our own journey and our own Christian walk. There is a cycle. I don't know what to call this. But I think maybe Thoreau had said something about this one time. So I'm gonna write something up on the board. So forgive my chicken scratch. But hopefully this will make some sense. But in context of our opening passage this morning, and I know I'm not supposed to turn my back to you, but I don't know another way to write. So our mind, the things in our heart, our thought process, affects the words or influences, I'll say, the words that we choose. The words that we speak then influence our actions. And I might run out of room before my circle's complete, so our actions then influence our habits. Habits influence our character. If I could spell the word character correctly. I think that's right. And our character then has a direct influence again in our thought process. So it's this cycle. I think we have all found ourselves in certain situations or maybe certain habits. Maybe there's a particular struggle with a sin that you have or something. And you find yourself again and again and again in this rut, if you will, of continued behavior that you know is not right, that the Apostle Paul talks about in Romans 8, where he says, that which I do, I don't really want to do. And the thing that I really want to do, that I don't do, talking about the struggle against the spirit and the flesh. Right? Well, this plays directly into that. And there's an entire cycle that our words have a key component of that can in turn influence this whole cycle that I really want to dig into with some Old Testament examples that we'll see. But if there's a particular pattern of behavior that we want to change, I believe that a good place to start is with our words. And I'll get into some application more in our lesson this morning. But to reread our introduction, from the fruit of a person's mouth, his stomach is satisfied. He is filled with the product of his lips. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. We've all heard that, all heard the phrase, you know, we oftentimes say that it's in a negative context. Oh, he'll eat those words, or you'll eat those words. We say that in a sense that we want to prove someone wrong about something. You'll eat those words. The truth is, we all eat our own words. The things that we say have a direct influence on in the direction of our life. Let's take an application. Let's take a field trip over to James, the third chapter, and we will read a few verses there. James 3, verses 2 through 5. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is mature, able also to control the whole body. Now, if we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we direct their whole bodies. And consider ships, though very large and driven by fierce winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So too, though the tongue is a small part of the body, it boasts of great things. Consider how small a fire sets ablaze a large forest. I think let's really try to dig in and understand what he says, that the power of our tongues, particularly verse 4. Let's read that again. And consider ships, though very large, and I believe that in this context he is equating ships into the direction of our life. They are driven by very fierce winds. Though very large and driven by fierce winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, the tongue, our words, wherever the will of the pilot, our mind, directs. The mind wants our life to go in a particular direction. The words we speak influence the actions and the habits that help us move in that direction. There are two kinds of words that I want to. There's a lot that we could cover. We could cover how words affect our personal relationships with each other, how gossip and things like that could affect us, and can affect the body. We could talk about how our words of instruction or words of destruction towards others. There's a lot that we could cover in this sphere. Maybe I'll get up a follow-up lesson to go over all of those. I want to talk about a broad concept, two broad concepts, though. I call these words of doubt, or maybe words of defeat, and then words of triumph. Words of doubt, we will see, words of doubt and faith can never exist in the same place. They never do. Faith always accompanies words of triumph. We're going to consider some examples of that. But in Numbers, the 13th chapter, we'll go through our Old Testament examples. In Numbers, the 13th chapter, Dennis had a beautiful lesson week's flown by. Last Sunday, about the beauty of God's plan and how the salvation of Jesus Christ is after a pattern of God's plan unfolding in the Old Testament through His promise to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and leading to Moses and the Exodus from Egypt. At this point, they have been removed from Egypt. God is giving them the land of Canaan. He plans on giving them the land. In verse 13, or of chapter 13, verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses, "Send men to scout out the land of Canaan I am giving to the Israelites." Very, very clear language. Send scouts out to see the land I'm giving you. It's yours. You just have to go take it. But I'm giving you this land. And if you think about what was the purpose of Numbers? Why is Numbers called Numbers? If you think about it. Well, there was a census God had commanded Moses to do, that they were going to count all of the different tribes and how many fighting men. And I can't remember the exact fighting force that they were able to hypothetically, you know, should the occasion ever arise where we would send every fighting member out. It was in the hundreds of thousands. I can't remember the exact, but I mean, imagine an army of hundreds of thousands of people. The scriptures don't explicitly say this, but I think part of the reason why God wanted the Israelites to do this census and to really count their forces is so that they would know how strong of a force that God had made them while they were captive in Egypt. How strong of a force they had become, so that when they got to this point, to the land that God wanted to give them, there would be no doubt in their mind that they could take it. That's what I believe that the purpose of Numbers was. Now, as I said, that comes from the book of Elton, you know, First Opinions, you know, chapter 1, verse 1. But I believe that was the attitude, the reason for counting, because it's all working up to this point of here we are at the land, go send out scouts, I want you to see how great it's going to be. Well, they go, verse 21, "So they went up and scouted out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob near the entrance of Hamath. They went through the Negev to the and came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were living, enemies of the Israelites. Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. When they came to the valley of Eshol, they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes, which was carried on a pole by two men. They also took some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshol because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from scouting out the land. Imagine that, a cluster of grapes that was large enough to be carried by two men on on poles. Those are some big grapes. Continuing on, we'll skip to verse 27. They reported to Moses, "We went into the land where you sent us. Indeed, it is flowing with milk and honey." And an analogy that is just, there's so much wealth in this land. "And here is some of its fruit. However, the people living in the land are strong and the cities are large and fortified. We also saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites are living in the land of the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live by the sea and along the Jordan." So, nothing surprising yet, okay? Land, it's wealthy. It's heavily guarded. The people there are very strong. They're large. It's a mighty force of a nation. What starts to creep in is doubt. I want you to pay very, very close attention to the words that are spoken by the other scouts, not Joshua and Caleb. Well, I'm going to pay attention to those too, because they're the ones that speak up first. Then Caleb quieted the people in the presence of Moses and said, "Let's go up now and take possession of the land, because we can certainly conquer it." Language of triumph. Words of triumph. Words of victory. Victorious language. I don't know what else to call it. Accompanied with faith. Why did they have the faith? Because God said, "I'm giving you this land." It was as simple as that. He knew it was already his, theirs, the countries. They just had to go fulfill their part and go do it and take it. But listen to the other men who had gone up. But the men who had gone up with him responded, "We can't attack the people because they are stronger than we are." They were thinking of their own strength and not God's strength. That was the first problem. But regardless, looking at the words. So they gave a negative report to the Israelites about the land they had scouted. "The land we passed through to explore is one that devours its inhabitants. And all the people we saw in it are men of great size. We even saw the Nephilim. There, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. To ourselves, we seem like grasshoppers, so we must have seemed the same to them." Language of defeat. They lost before they even started. And it was a lack of faith that influenced, it was their mind that influenced the words that they spoke, which then influenced their actions, which led, let's see how God responded. Verse 11, chapter 14, "The Lord said to Moses, 'How long will these people despise me? How long will they not trust in me despite all the signs I have performed among them? I will strike them with a plague and destroy them. Then I will make you into a greater and mightier nation than they are.'" That's what God was going to do. Moses, imagine this. Okay. I feel like this is a great story of personal growth. Moses is now arguing with the Lord not to do this. Just a few years ago, Moses had stumbled upon a burning bush And that conversation that he had with the Lord then, Moses, I want you to go. I can't go and do that. I can't talk really well. I can't do this. I can't do that. And Moses had a very, very poor image of himself. He didn't know yet who he belonged to. He didn't know yet who was on his side. And so arguing with the Lord because why he can't do this great task of leading the nation of Israel. And now we are here a few years later. God's ready to smite the entire nation because of their doubt, largely influenced by the words that they spoke. Ready to just wipe them out and start over. And Moses said, hold up. Hold up. Imagine the relationship that you... That's a pretty confident, strong relationship that you have with the Lord. when you say, hey, hold it. Don't do that. Wrong move. Telling God that. Who would have been just in doing so? Right? But he said, you're going to, if you do that, then the Egyptians and all the nations will say that you led them out to the wilderness just to kill them. So the Lord listened to Moses. But the Israelites did not go unpunished. We know they wandered about for 40 years in the wilderness. Two things I want to notice: how quickly negative spreads, because how people will be so quick to believe something that's negative. They were so quick to believe of the negative report that the 10 men had, and not the report that Joshua and Caleb gave, because they said later, their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. He said that they said that later to the crowd. But how quickly is it that negative spreads? I guess this is our segue to gossip and things like that. Now, how different would that situation have turned out if they all spoke the same way Joshua and Caleb did? If they all said, yeah, we can take them. Let's do it. The Lord is on our side. There's nothing that we can't accomplish. He's already given us this land. He said it. It's not just some idea that we've thought of. It came from Him. He said it already. Let's go out and take it. Well, we wouldn't have had the story be quite different. But the story that we have is the one that we can learn from. So negative spreads really quickly. When you're speaking to others, when you're speaking about someone, I heard Stephen Covey say this one time in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People: always honor the absent. Always be loyal to the absent. What does that mean? Well, if you're speaking about someone to someone else, say only what you would say if they were right there with you. Be loyal to the absent. Secondly, God's reaction to this self-defeating speech resulted in all this doubt when God wanted to wipe them out. Notice, think about the conversation that I mentioned earlier with Moses and the Lord at the burning bush. the Lord would say, I'm choosing you to do this, this, and this. Go lead the people of Israel out of Egypt. Moses gave him a laundry list of excuses why he couldn't. The scriptures say the Lord's anger was kindled against Moses, lit like a fire. That's always been interesting wording to me, that the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. Why? His reluctance to obey? Yes. But largely influenced, his action was only influenced by his mind and his words. So that is an example of the language of defeat or fear language. I mean, we see both examples in that passage. But go quickly now to 1 Samuel 17. We know this story very well. I won't belabor it. David and Goliath, this mammoth of a man, comes in and is basically making a mockery out of God's army. And David hears about it. Well, he hears about the reward first, about what he's going to get, a portion of the king's treasure and his daughter in marriage. He's going to win the heart of the princess by slaying Goliath. And it's funny because I didn't notice it before. But he hears the reward, and he's like, what's that? Come again? What did you say the reward was? Sign me up. It's really kind of funny what his motivation was. But listen to the language that he uses. They're trash talking each other. Verse 45 is what David says. Well, I'll back up. Verse 41. This is a good banter going back and forth. The Philistine, Goliath, came closer and closer to David with the shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he despised him because he was just a youth, healthy and handsome. He said to David, am I a dog that you come against me with sticks? Then he cursed David by his gods. Come here, the Philistine called to David, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts. Here's this mammoth of a man speaking to this little boy. David said to the Philistine, listen to the power behind these words, and I want you to think of using these words, formulate them however you will, but use the attitude of these words whenever you're confronted with a challenge, when you're confronted with a sin, when you're confronted with just a difficult situation, a Goliath, a giant, if you will. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with a sword, spear, and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord of armies, the God of the ranks of Israel. You have defied him. Today, the Lord will hand you over to me. Today, I'll strike you down, remove your head, and give the corpses of the Philistine camp to the birds of the sky and the wild creatures of the earth. Then all the world will know that Israel has a God, and the whole assembly will know that it is not by sword or by spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's. He will hand you over to us. I can just imagine the dead silence that there must have been. Thousands of soldiers encircled around. I kind of see it as, I don't know if there ever were fights that broke out when you were in school, but it seemed like if there's an area and there was a fight that broke out, there'd just be this crowd of people that would, it was this, I don't know, undefined wall that no one went beyond. At least that's the way, you know, I always saw them. I imagine that. this almost encircling this open area. And David says that, and you could practically hear a pin drop. Because everyone else saw David. This is another important lesson. Everyone else saw David as just a boy. Wasn't even strong enough, physically strong enough, to wear Saul's armor. He said, "Get this stuff off of me. I can't wear this. I can't even move. It's too heavy." So he comes out in his shepherd's clothing with a staff and a couple of rocks in his bag and a slingshot practically. All these soldiers, veteranized warriors, scared to death. But here comes David. Young guy, probably 20s. Maybe early 30s. I don't know. Young. Everyone else saw David as just this kid. But David saw himself as an instrument of the Lord of armies. It really wasn't about David. It was about the fact that this Philistine has defied the living God. Very powerful. Whenever we're confronted with a sin, confronted with a challenge, confronted with a choice, a giant, a Goliath, if you will, going into it, let's go into it knowing that the Lord has given us victory because the battle is His. Right? There's not a temptation that He hasn't created a way of escape for. There's no situation that we can't overcome. If God be for us, who can be against us? Whenever we have a situation that we're dealing with, if we go into it knowing that we already have that the battle is the Lord's, it's not ours, but the battle is His, and He wins every time, we'll be a lot better off. Very last point. I'll wrap up with this. Man, I am on a roll. Saved myself from falling a couple of times and dropping markers and all kinds of good stuff. I'll wrap up with this. I want you to consider the creation account, Genesis 1. Out of all of the ways. This thought gives me chills. I don't know. It might not do anything for you, but it does me. Out of all the ways that God could have created, you think about creating creativity. That's a pretty phenomenal thought. Creating creativity. Out of all the ways He could create the world, the universe, how does He choose to do it? He spoke, and it became so. God spoke, and it was so. He spoke, and it was so. Then He said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." Made you being made in the likeness of God. What does that say about the creative or destructive power of your words? Which, by the way, John says the Word then became flesh and dwelt among us. And by by the Word, everything was created. What a beautiful picture that all makes. But consider that. The creative power of your words. We all know that words can destroy. We that cute little saying, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. It's kind of false. Whether it's someone else's or your own. Most of the time, it might be our own. We shoot ourselves in the foot if we don't understand the creative power of our words. So I hope that something that we've studied this morning has been a benefit to you. We come to the portion now of our service where if there's someone here that needs to obey the gospel, believe that Jesus is the Christ, repent of your sins, confess him before men, and be baptized for the remission of your sins. If you've done these things, have a relationship with Christ, but have fallen away and you want to be restored, we can help you do that as well. Make your decision while we stand and while we sing.